Welcome to the Friday Night Clive podcast with me, Clive Payne. In this podcast, we look back at the amazing charities, organisations and people we have chatted to over the past few months, all of whom have interesting and important stories to tell. I'm joined by Monica Shafak, who is the CEO of the mental health charity Kaleidoscope Plus. Now, they're based in West Bromwich, and Kaleidoscope Plus has been ranked 9th in the top 100 best not-for-profit companies to work for the fifth year running, according to the Sunday Times. Monica and her team champion mental health and well-being and provide support services to the community, and Monica joins me on the line now. Good evening, Monica.
Hi, Clive. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. And thank you. And I trust you are as well.
Thank you.
Good. Tell me about Kaleidoscope Plus then. Tell me about the charity and what your key objectives are.
So we were set up as a charity in 1973. We'll be celebrating our 48th birthday in November this year. And we primarily support people who suffer with ill mental health. As you say, we're based in West Bromwich, but we do actually deliver services at a regional and a national level. And our aims really are recovery, inclusion and awareness. We want to include people in how the delivery, how the services are supporting them, because we feel it's very important that we work with people rather than to people. Mm-hmm. Everybody is very different. The experiences that they will have will be very unique to them. So it's not a case of one size fits all. But we also recognise that some people won't recover. So it's about helping them recognise the signs, the triggers, and giving them the tools to be able to manage those symptoms. And obviously, there's a lot of stigma around mental health and mental illness. And therefore, we want to raise awareness along the way so that those people who do feel as though they need support feel confident and have the courage to come up and speak and say that they need that support, because it is okay not to be okay.
Who do you tailor the support for? Is it for everybody, in all of us in society, or are there certain key groups or key areas that you concentrate on?
So mental health doesn't discriminate. What we don't want to do is marginalise any particular group or ethnic background. So our services do cover a wide range of people, young people, older people, people from different demographics. But it does depend on how they're funded and what locality that they're actually funded in, whether they'll be accessible to everybody. So, for example, we have a counselling service that is accessible to anyone over the age of 16, which is delivered nationally, whereas we also have a specific young person's service, which is only accessible to people that live in Sandwell. So it all really depends on how it's funded and what the eligibility criteria is. That's usually determined by the funder.
Now, those are two elements that you've talked about there. Tell me about the other services and support that you offer.
Okay, so we have a care home, which is based in West Bromwich, and that is for people who have long-term injury mental health needs and are very unlikely to be able to live independently in the community. We have supported housing, which is similar to a care home, but for people who are semi-independent, who do have a degree of independence, but need a little bit of support now and again from our support workers. We, as I say, provide a service for children and young people in Sandwell. It's for people who may be suffering low mood, may also have levels of stress and anxiety. And it's about helping them through creative ways in terms of providing them support with their triggers and providing them with self-help tools to help maintain their well-being. But we also work with children who may be on the looked-after register, for example, might be on the child sexual exploitation register, may have a history of youth offending. But we also work with foster carers and professionals who work with children in those settings. We have a counselling service. We work with people who've been sadly bereaved by suicide, also people who may have suicidal ideation. We also provide wellbeing support to older people. So it's a whole range of activities and services that we provide. We have a 24-hour crisis text line. So if anybody feels as though they need support, they can get free support from us via a text service. And more recently, we've also opened a sanctuary hub in the heart of West Bromwich, which is for people, again, who may be feeling as though they need emergency support, but it's to prevent them accessing support through emergency services and blocking up A&E. So they can come to our hub, which is open from 6 in the evening till 11 in the evening, Monday to Friday. And it's also open from 12 o'clock in the afternoon to 11 o'clock in the evening over the weekends. Because what we want to do is we want to release that pressure on the NHS, because there is a huge demand on mental health services at the moment. So we're trying to do all we can to relieve the pressures across all of the communities that we serve.
So your colleagues, is everybody salaried or waged, or have you got volunteers that are supporting you as well?
The vast amount of people that work with us are salaried, but because of the demand that we are now experiencing with mental illness and the need for mental health support, we are calling out for volunteers. So we've recently employed a volunteer coordinator to help us with that, because we recognise that we just can't provide the level of demand that's out there. We can't supply that. We do need volunteers to help us, but equally we don't have the funding to be able to do that. I'd love to be able to provide salaried support for everybody who needs it out there, but it's just not feasible. The demands on funding in terms of government cuts is really high. Competition is really high. As you said in the introduction, there's lots of mental health charities providing lots of fantastic work. But demand is increasing. It's at an all-time high. I've been working for the organisation for 11 years now, and I've never seen it as big as it is at the moment.
How are you funded, since you mentioned that?
Primarily through contracts with local authorities that we work with. But as I mentioned, a lot of that funding is now decreasing because of pressures on local government and central government funding. So we are very reliant on fundraising activities. We're reliant on donations, working with corporate partners. It costs around about £3 million to run our services every year.
Crumbs.
So we have to find that. We have to find that figure from wherever we can. And only a small proportion of what we're actually funded is from local authorities and from central government. So, you know, we are really, really dependent on the kindness of local people to donate and fundraise for us.
Now, you offer, as you've just said, a wide cross-section of support services. What other health professionals do you work with in partnership?
We work with a vast range of professionals. I mean, when somebody comes to us with a mental health condition, 99% of the time they have another support need as well. They will present with some sort of additional support requirement. For example, they may have a housing issue, they may be in debt, they may be seeking employment. And we recognise that we can't be everything to everyone. So we do have partnerships with other organisations, because what we want to do is we want to try and smooth out the referral process for people. What we don't want to be doing is, when somebody presents with a mental health issue, is to say, okay, we can support you with your mental health crisis, but for your housing, you need to go down the road and register with such and such. We want to kind of smooth that process out so that we have those active working relationships with partners, so that we can make those referrals on their behalf and have arrangements in place where, for example, if they do come through Kaleidoscope, they may get sort of pumped up the waiting list so they don't have to wait so long for support. Because what we're also finding is a lot of people who need mental health support are having to wait such a long time. If you're in crisis, you need that support now. You can't wait 6 months. You can't wait 12 months. You need it then. So we're trying different ways to ensure that we can provide that support as much as we can at the time when the individual needs it.
I mean, really, you need to be a one-stop shop, don't you, where somebody, you know, approaches you and, as you say, you do all that sort of partnership work for them, so it makes their journey a lot easier. If I was somebody that I felt I needed mental health support, how do I get referred to you? Am I able to approach you directly, or do I have to go through a third party or a partnership agency?
Again, it depends on how the particular service is funded. The vast amount of our services you can self-refer to, and if you go to our website, you will see the range of services that we provide and the referral forms for each of them. So, you could go on the website, you can fill out a referral form, and that will come to us, and we'll take it from there. You could pick up the phone, or you could actually speak to your GP as well. A lot of the GPs in the Black Country do know about our services, and they will refer to us. There's a number of ways, really. There are self-referral routes, but there are routes through other professionals as well.
But as you say, it depends on what the individual's needs are at the time.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, how do you feel that your support differs from other mental health providers?
When we were set up as a Mind organisation. So back in 73, we were actually set up as Sandwell Mind, and we work specifically in the Sandwell area. And whilst Mind does some fantastic campaigning work, we did find, well, actually, the logo itself and the brand itself was quite counterproductive, because everybody knows what Mind stands for. Everybody knows that, you know, it is a charity that helps people who have mental illness. But there's so much stigma around mental ill health. The brand itself was putting people off from accessing services. So in 2013, we decided to disaffiliate from Mind and become the Kaleidoscope Plus Group. And the name, there is like a meaning behind the name. So at that time, we consulted with our staff, consulted with our service users and our partners, and we said, what is it that you like about Sandwell Mind, and what is it that you would like us to retain when we rebrand and launch ourselves as whatever it was going to be? And we were told that a lot of our clients were saying to us at the time that when they seek support from us, they seek support at a time when they're in a very dark place in their lives. Mm-hmm. And we shine the light back into their lives like a kaleidoscope, but we recognise that actually they're more than just their mental illness. There are lots of different things to their personalities, to their lives, and we bring those broken pieces together and make them feel whole again. But at the same time, we recognise that what might work for them now may not work for them in 6 months' time, because circumstances change, whether that be personal circumstances or the external environment. And we will work with the individual to ensure that, you know, the support that they are getting is always at a level that is right for them at that particular time. So it was like a kaleidoscope that we're always evolving, mm-hmm. but we're bringing all those broken pieces together, and that we're shining the light back into their lives. And I think that's quite a unique way of kind of describing how we do genuinely work. We will work on a one-to-one basis in a holistic way as possible, mm-hmm. with the person at the centre of our support. And as I said earlier, we do know that not one size fits all. So what might work well for me might not work so well for you, and vice versa. And we'll also find, for example, with counselling, if you access NHS counselling, the chances are you'll only get 6 sessions, because that's what the counselling services in NHS primarily do. With us, if you need more than 6 sessions, we will give you more than 6 sessions, mm-hmm. because what we don't want to be doing is kind of open a can of worms when you have that conversation and you're going through that counselling process and get to the point where actually somebody has divulged a lot of information and they've acknowledged a lot of things that perhaps they've never acknowledged before, and then at the 6th session have to say, okay, sorry, but, you know, we've come to the end and you have to go back on the waiting list to receive more support. Mm. That can actually be more detrimental,
yes.
than continuing with those sessions. So yeah. I genuinely do think that we are very different to a lot of other services out there.
I bet the pandemic has had an effect on your workload and impacted the services that you provide, hasn't it?
It definitely has. I mean, we've seen the devastating effect of the furlough scheme, the impact on children and young people in terms of, you know, their inability to be able to socialise as they would have done traditionally. We've found that a lot of the people that have been contacting us throughout the pandemic are people who wouldn't ordinarily have contacted us beforehand, whose level of mental illness and emotional well-being was at a stable or at a really good level, but they found themselves in very stressful situations, either because of something that's happening to them directly, whether that's through, you know, a direct impact of COVID or through the environmental issues that COVID has placed on people or because of somebody that they're living with. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've had people say to us, you know, my son, my daughter, my neighbour, you know, a loved one is suffering with this and I've never had to deal with this situation before. Can you give me some guidance? Can you give me some advice? So we're finding that it's not only people that are suffering themselves, but it's people who are caring for individuals who are perhaps impacted upon. And as a result of that, during the pandemic, we set up a new service called Talk to Us, specifically for that situation, so people could get advice and guidance. It's not a therapeutic service. It's not an intervention. It is just to be able to provide some support and guidance on somebody who may be looking for some information, which people were finding hard to locate. So, yeah, it was really important that we set up that service, which has been running really well.
Now, we talked about the fact that, as you say, with NHS and other agencies, that there may be a waiting list and the person needs that help and support there and then. How long is your average sort of waiting time for people to use your services? I guess it depends on the kind of service that is necessary for them. But just give me a sort of ballpark figure as to how long we would have to wait.
You're right. It does depend on what the kind of service is, but on average we don't want people to wait longer than a month.
We do try and make the first contact
within a month, and what we will do is if we can't support them straight away and we have to put them on a waiting list where they're waiting a little bit longer than that month, we will refer them to other services within Kaleidoscope so that they're getting a check-in at least, rather than just being put on a waiting list and not hearing anything until they're at the top of the list again. Mm. So we will check in on people and phone them and say, we know you're on the waiting list. It's not quite your turn yet, but are you okay? Is there something that we can do in the meantime just to kind of give you that additional support while
That's
you're on
key,
that list?
Isn't it? And then they feel that they're valued and they are being listened to and their needs are being looked at. And as you say, it's just a case of waiting rather than just leaving them to fend for themselves, which, as you say, if it's a really dark part of their life, time in their life, then they don't need that. You know, they need to feel the love, don't they, really?
It's the last thing that they want to be doing is being left on a waiting list and not hearing anything for months. I think everybody's reasonable enough to understand that there are waiting lists and that, you know, that there's likelihood to be a delay in receiving support. But if you keep that constant communication with the individual, not only is that fair on them, but it makes them, like you say, feel valued. And if you're at a time when you are feeling low and no one's getting in touch with you, well, actually, that's going to make you feel even worse. Mm. And that's what we really need to avoid. So, like I say, it's really important that we keep that ongoing communication with the individual so they know exactly what's happening and when they're likely to be seen, and they've got that point of contact just in case they need some additional support during that waiting time.
What happens, for example, if it's identified that somebody is in urgent need of help? What happens then?
So, as I mentioned, we do have a 24-hour text service that anybody can contact at any time. It's 24/7. It's available 365 days of the year. It doesn't come up on your phone bill, so if anybody's worrying about, you know, it being identifiable through those means, it isn't. It's free of charge. So they can text that service and a trained volunteer will text the individual back and they will talk about what the situation might be and they will help them come to what we call a safety plan if they're in crisis. We would also obviously say to them that if they need urgent support right there and then, obviously the A&E services, they should contact emergency services and go to A&E. But also, as I mentioned, for people in Sandwell, we've got the crisis hub based at our offices in West Bromwich, which they can access outside of traditional working hours.
So for people who want to text, give me the text number, if you will.
Yep, so if you are in crisis and do need support, you can text Team KPG to 85258.
So and as I said before, that's KPG2. Available. And what was the text number, sorry, Monica?
It's 85258.
85258.
Yeah.
Okay, so lovely. Okay. Now, according to a statistic on your website, black or black British people are more likely to experience a mental health problem than a white person. Why do you think this is, and what are you doing to change that?
I think there's a number of reasons why this is the case. People who live in more deprived areas or are in lower social economical groups tend to be affected by mental illness more than others, and you will find that people from ethnic minority communities are disproportionately within those communities, within those areas and those social groups. So I think that contributes to some of that statistic. Stigma is a huge issue across the nation, across all communities, but I think there is a greater stigma within ethnic minority communities. I come from an Asian background, and I know within the Asian community that mental health is a huge taboo subject, more so than it is in white communities. There isn't the kind of ability as much as in other communities to talk about the issue. It's very much kept within the household, not even talked about with the wider family. So I think that contributes to it. I think there's a distrust with health providers generally, with ethnic minority groups as well. So I think there's a range of reasons why ethnic minority communities are affected disproportionately. What we do as an organisation is we ensure that all of our staff are reflective of the communities that we serve. So I've said earlier that mental health doesn't discriminate. Representation matters. You know, we talk about equality and diversity, and if you see somebody that is similar to you providing a service, you're more likely to want to also receive that service from them. So we try and ensure that we encourage people from ethnic minorities to be involved in our work. We will ensure that our staff are trained, doesn't matter what ethnic background you're from. They will be trained in equality and diversity so they can recognise some of the disparities and some of the difficulties and barriers that all communities have. And that I've talked about ethnic minorities, but obviously there's the LGBT community, there's, you know, a travelling community, there's all sorts of communities within our community, the wider communities that are affected by this issue. So we will talk about things like that. We will provide our support in a culturally diverse way. So we have people that will speak specific languages. Some of our videos are in a different language. Some of our literature is in a different language. But we also recognise that people who may speak a specific language don't always read that language. So, you know, translating things in a different language isn't necessarily the only way to go. But, you know, we have open days in local community centres and in places of worship where different communities may gather so that we can raise awareness of this issue and encourage those communities to come forward and seek support if they need it.
Now, what fundraising campaigns have you run, Monica, and what have you got coming up? Because as you said at the beginning, your funding is sort of, you know, being cut, so you're having to fund yourselves as best you can. So I'm sure you've got some campaigns that are on the go at the moment.
We have, and it's really nice to be able to say that, because obviously over the last 18 months, nobody's been able to do any kind of fundraising events. So we have a few things coming up in the next few months. We have a charity cricket match that's been held at Colesley Cricket Club on the 29th of August. And as well as a cricket match, there'll be kind of a family fun day there. So there'll be a bouncy castle, there's Caribbean street food, and there'll be a raffle and all sorts of things there. And if anybody wants to get involved in that, we are looking for players to play on our team, as well as people to attend the day itself. We're also involved with the Black Country 10K run on the 12th of September. And somehow I've been roped in to actually run that, which I think is going to be
well done, you.
To say the least. And that's happening, as I say, on the 12th of September in Hales Owen. We've got a Midland Legends Golf Day and Dinner, which is happening on the 29th of October at the Forest of Arden Country Club. And that is being held with a group of ex-professional footballers from clubs across the West Midlands. So we've got representatives from Aston Villa, Birmingham City, Wolves, West Brom, even Leicester City and Derby County involved. And there's opportunities there for people to kind of play golf with the legends, and then if they wanted to also attend a dinner afterwards, and the dinner will kind of be a three-course meal with a raffle and auction and the rest of it. And we're also organising our very first mental health conference in November, which I'm really, really excited about. So that takes place on the 17th and the 18th of November this year. It'll be held online, and we've got some fantastic speakers. So we're trying to arrange a lot of events that will appeal to different communities and different needs. So, you know, the conference may be more suitable for professionals. Mm-hmm. But like I said, we've got the quick hit, and we've got the run and all
sorts. All sorts, then. That sounds super. How can we find out more, Monica, about Kaleidoscope Plus?
The best way to find out about us is to visit our website, which is www.kaleidoscopeplus.org.uk.
And if we don't have access to the internet, can we ring you?
You can. Our lines are open from 9 till 5, Monday to Friday, and our telephone number is 0121 565 5605.
0121 565 5605. Monica That's Shafak, right. CEO of Kaleidoscope Plus, thank you very much for talking to Friday Night Clive.
That is your lot for this episode. You can catch the programme live every Friday night on Black Country Radio from 8 p.m. If you like our podcast, please subscribe by heading to blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts from. See you very soon. This is a Black Country Radio podcast presented by Clive Payne and produced by Andy Caddick.